Me too. So we're talking about the second noble truth tonight. And the noble truths are really the first and frequent teachings that the Buddha gave through decades of teachings, coming back again and again to these fundamental insights into our human experience. The first noble truth, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, is that in this lifetime, we will experience stress and dissatisfaction at times. That's just really part of the game. It's not personal. It's just the way it goes. The second noble truth that we'll dig into a bit more tonight is that the cause of so much of our dissatisfaction, our dukkha, our experience of suffering, is our relationship to the wanting mind, our relationship to craving. You could even say some of our suffering is just driven directly by that experience of wanting things to be different than they are. The third noble truth is the good news that there's a way out. We don't have to struggle as much. We don't have to suffer as much with how we experience craving and how we experience this life. And then the fourth noble truth offers like a roadmap, an action plan, what to do to get ourselves more free, maybe even to move toward awakening. But tonight we're on craving. I was reflecting on why these are called noble truths, and I think on one level it's certainly because these were so fundamental to the insights that the Buddha offered, and there's like a nobility and a truth to that. The calling it like he saw it with, hey, sometimes we suffer. Hey, sometimes we get trapped by the clinging mind. You know, there's a nobility to that kind of clarity and truth. I think some of the nobility as well, though, is that this makes our opportunity for awakening and freedom so available to us. These truths are noble because we experience them so frequently. We suffer, we crave, we get caught up in how much we want. And so that means it's always right there for us to move from that place of imprisonment of the heart to a place of more ease and freedom. And I feel like there's a nobility to that for me. It's not about some rarefied special thing that none of us really have access to. Nope. It's like right here. It's how much I didn't want to hear the noises on the street during my meditation practice. Just that accessible. There were a lot of words in Pali, the language in which the Buddha's teachings may have been first written down in. A lot of different words to describe the clinging and craving mind. Even in our short meditation, we may have experienced different flavors of what it's like to want. Right? The word tanha is maybe directly translated as thirst, and also very much offered in the noble truths as translated as craving. There's also upadana, which is it's more of like the sticky kind of clinging aspect that can come after, like, oh yeah, I want that, and then it can get sticky after that. Right, that's upadana. There are even pritas, or hungry ghosts, This is sort of the, on the continuum of craving, we go from just sort of this impulse, oh, I'd like that, to the clinging, sticky kind of wanting, all the way to hungry ghosts, which is that feeling that I have to have that to be okay. Gets talked about as addiction sometimes, and there's a translation somewhere of one of the Buddha's teachings. I haven't been able to track it back down, but it impressed me so much when I first read it. It was that the Buddha offering this teaching that all of the world is an addict and I alone am not addicted as a way of talking about his state of clarity and freedom from the grasp of this craving mind. And then there's this word chanda, which directly translates as fuel. It's something that is nutriment or keeps something continuing to burn, but also can be used and translated to mean like desiring to possess. But it's also, it could also be, it's very context dependent, this chanda idea, because it can be very positive too. It could refer to our desire to practice, our aspiration to awaken and be free from dissatisfaction and the ways that we suffer needlessly. So it's context specific. And I think that's a really important thing to hold when we're relating with craving. I don't know that we're going to get rid of craving. I don't know that that feels useful or relevant to aim for me. I'm not convinced that in this lifetime I'm not going to have wants and desires. But I might learn to relate to the times when my mind is gripped with wanting. I might learn to relate with that more skillfully. And I feel like that's, you know, the context or perspective that I bring to the experience of craving is right where it's either a prison or my actual path to freedom. Anyway, the Buddha wasn't really that keen on craving, so I have a quote from the suttas for you. Monks, I will teach you craving. The ensnarer that has flowed along, spread out, and caught hold, with which this world is smothered and enveloped like a tangled skein, a knotted ball of string like matted rushes and reeds, and does not go beyond the plains of deprivation, woe, and bad destinations. Listen well, and I will speak. So maybe not a vote in favor of just following our heart's desire, whatever it may be. Maybe a suggestion that we really pay attention to this experience of craving, so that we don't get caught in the plains of woe and deprivation. So, the fact that we're all here today means that we do experience wanting, we experience the desire and the movement toward in a way that's healthy and functional and sustains life. In a sense, we're all wired to desire, otherwise we would literally just starve to death if we didn't have the desire to nourish the body, right? So that's part and parcel of this human body and human mind that we arrived here with. And in the wondrous ways that contemporary neurobiology are illuminating some of the Buddha's original insights, we see that the desires that the brain manufactures, when we're able to achieve them and sustain some kind of survival advantage, we get a dopamine hit. We feel better. We get the release of some endogenous endorphins, and we feel even better. our stress hormones go down, anxiety goes down. We really kind of feel like we hit the jackpot when we got that thing. And it worked beautifully when we really were needing to survive as a species. A little bit less relevant for us in most scenarios today. And that reward mechanism can get us into a bit of mischief in the world of, I don't know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll that we have so abundantly available. Not only is it a personal risk, but in some sense we might see this inclination to want and to acquire as being, the survival mechanism has run amok to the point where there's real environmental impacts from so many of us able to so easily get that dopamine hit when we get it. Right? But at some essential level, I feel like it's real important to know it's not our fault that we want, and there's nothing wrong with wanting. But as we move along the continuum from, wow, I just want to eat enough to not starve between now and tomorrow, all the way to whatever our own hungry ghosts might be, right? Then we come into this world of craving that the Buddha elucidated just with incredible precision, the ways this mind manufactures to want. Not only is this movement from craving to suffering part of the Four Noble Truths, it's also part of another fundamental teaching we hear called dependent arising or dependent origination. This idea that there's links or chains that lead from one thing, one sensory experience perhaps, all the way through a full cycle of, oh, I want that. Oh, I have to have that. Oh, you know, we get more and more extreme in our minds and in our experience as we go along. And at some point, that simple idea that, hey, wouldn't that be lovely? That's a nice thing. Or I like that person. I'd like to get to know them better. This original sort of simple impulse can get built up into a really extreme kind of stranglehold. And we might feel, I don't know, maybe some of us have had that sense that, like, we might die of how much we want it. Like, anybody who's had their heart broken, anybody who's suffered with an addiction, anybody who has maybe, like, cycle-checked their phone just waiting to see if they got that job, that house, that whatever, something that feels big and important, right? That can carry a feeling with it that we honestly might feel like we could die if we don't have that craving met. And so that's this chain of different things leading into each other, independent arising. So really, really fundamental and so beautifully elucidated in the Buddha's teachings. Looking at the sort of three big baskets of craving that he outlined, the first is kama tanha. So remember, tanha is like thirst. I just got thirsty when I said that. I want water. So kama tanha is our desire and craving for sense pleasures. You know, the things. Physical comfort. And to some extent, maybe this is a pretty obvious one. Like, we've all felt that, and we navigate our world wanting to be more comfortable, and for the most part we're fairly successful. You wander into the occasional space that doesn't have aircon when you prefer it, but for the most part we're phenomenally successful at staying physically comfortable in many regards. I had to chuckle at myself the other day. I was on a little bit of a retreat and doing some walking meditation on a very short little path with sand. Mostly, it was sand-ish. So I had my shoes off. I was going to be like all in touch with the earth and the ground and like feeling my meditation. And I realized at some point, several paces into it, I realized that despite my intention to be walking mindfully and like feeling the feels, I kept stopping and like brushing the little pebbles off the bottom of my feet, and I hadn't even noticed it for some time. And these weren't, you know, they weren't glass shards. They were just small pebbles that I really could have walked on with no big deal coming of it. But it was just so immediate and so instinctual to try to conserve my comforts and my preferences in that physical way. And I did. I kind of chuckled at myself. And I kept doing it until I had my path nicely cleared, and then I could just enjoy my walking meditation without those pesky pebbles. So, kama tanha is just that, sensual pleasures. Vibhava tanha is, I think in many regards, more subtle. Vibhava tanha is our desire to not be, our desire to not exist. I relate to this best for me through those times when I don't want to feel. I don't want to feel what's present. I want to just check out and numb out somehow. And it could be, for some of us, it could be substances, it could be sex, it could be internet gaming and like getting that dopamine hit that feels better than whatever we were experiencing. It can also be a trick of the mind. I'm thinking of a time I had a difficult chat to my sister and hung up the phone and realized I was, you know, at some point along, I was not wanting to feel the pain of that call. I was busy talking about it and explaining it and, you know, telling my partner or whoever, you know, talking about it and managing what I would do differently, anything to not actually feel that experience. Ajahn Damodaro, a Thai teacher, talks about vibhava tanha as saying that it's a craving not to be what one is. You know, not wanting to face certain truths about ourselves. It could also be taking a real cool, cynical, kind of intellectual stance, as perhaps I did in my more punk rock nihilistic days. You know, oh, it doesn't even matter, right? Like the sheer size of the uncertainty of my life and the things that felt unmanageable and uncertain to me at that time, rather than, again, letting myself be touched by how vulnerable that felt, I could just be too cool, right? And just think it doesn't even matter anyway, man. So, real insidious, this vibhava tanha. And I'm noticing right now, it feels like real heartbreaking to think about, like, craving to not be who one is. Like that's a tough space to sit in, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is a topic that needs so much tenderness and gentleness from us. It's not another place to beat ourselves up, right? All these ways that we want. So the third big basket that the Buddha offered is bhava tanha. So we'd vibhava tanha, craving not to be, and then bhava tanha. So that's that, this thirst to become. And that's this real place of creating our identities and our egos, think this is like the mental management of all those relationships, all of those minutes spent in meditation, thinking about how that conversation should have gone or how it's going to go tomorrow, so that they'll think better of us, so that we'll get what we want. It can also be other ways that we concretize into fixed views. You know, any of those times when we lose our capacity to relate with the fluid, open nature of this moment out of a desire to make it be something and something specific. You know, this is this quality of bhava tanha. In the Tanha Sutta, the Thirst Sutta, it said that this is the first expression of craving. It's the driving force of the wheel of samsara, this cycle of craving and suffering and doing it again and again and again. And it's this solid view of I am here, I am good, I am bad. And so these judgments and values that we just throw down, often about ourselves, and hold on to, this might, for some of us, be a place that we've experienced some discomfort and some unease in how we relate to the world. Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote, "The basic causes that sustain our wandering in samsara lie within ourselves. We roam from life to life, or moment to moment, the Buddha teaches, because we are driven by a profound, insatiable urge for the perpetuation of our being. This urge the Buddha called bhava tanha, the craving for existence. Craving brings forth a new existence. The new existence gives ground for craving to resume its search for gratification." And we just do this moment by moment by moment, right? I kind of appreciate how that, in the Tanha Sutta, it goes from I am good, I am bad. But if you make those stories up about ourselves, just moment by moment by moment, never mind that they don't actually even, we're not even being consistent with those identities we're making, right? Just making a new one. And so then on our continuum, we get again to the pretas or the hungry ghosts. The image of this, the visual image of this, some of you may have seen depictions, but it's often depicted, these ghosties, as being these hideous bluish things with big swollen bellies and long skinny necks and a teeny little pinhole mouth. And they're just, the belly is bloated and swollen with hunger and starvation, but the mouth and the tight throat are so tiny and so tight that you can't ever get enough in. You know, so these hungry ghosts are doomed to just wander, starving, never able to find the nourishment that they need. Such a strong image. Maybe some of the reason for our own hungry ghosts, maybe some of the reason we're not able to satisfy that hunger is so many of us might be reaching for the wrong thing. We're not reaching for what would actually satisfy and nourish that seemingly endless pit. We're reaching for, I don't know, a new Gucci handbag. Like, okay, maybe this is not the crowd for that. But you know, like I was looking for a neutral example, you know, like not everybody has suffered with actual like addictions per se, but we've all got something. And it might not be, you know, needing to be the top performer at work or close the most sales, right? We're reaching for this thing and it seems unreachable and we suffer behind it. But actually, maybe that's not what we're really looking for. And I feel like this is a place where we have so much potential for healing. You know, this is so workable when we take that cue from the image of the hungry ghost, this very somatic, very physical image of the body of this being. And we can bring some of our somatic practices into how we relate with this experience of craving, and we can start to get in touch with, as we may have in our meditation tonight, we can start to get in touch with, I want, where do I feel that in my body? And we can practice with that. We can learn to see, what is it that I really want, if not the Gucci handbag? You know, maybe it's a feeling of security, a desire to be loved. Maybe this is something really old that I'm trying to feed with the wrong thing. So I just wander starving because I'm not feeding myself with what would truly heal and truly nourish. So this is where we come back again to this, the desire of Chanda, this balancing kind of desire to find a way to relate with these cravings more skillfully, to find some ease and freedom, and to awaken from the places that we've been sort of numbed out or operating on autopilot or going after the wrong things. So many skillful means to do that. But I want to offer this idea that each of these big baskets points us toward particular areas we might heal and find freedom. You know, vibhava tanha, this desire to not be, you know, this can point us toward, wow, rather than suffering in that kind of isolation and loneliness, maybe I could find ways to connect and find community and relationship and find a sense of healthy, related identity there. Maybe this idea of attachment, you know, we talk about it in Buddhism as almost like a bad word, like you don't want to be all attached, man, don't be clingy. But we see from contemporary psychological studies, we begin to really see the importance of having healthy attachments, and that if those were missing early on and we didn't feel safe and protected in our early spaces, that it leaves us so vulnerable now to be looking in the wrong places to attach. So it's not that attachment is bad. It's that, am I being skillful with where I'm looking to meet that desire to connect? You know, perhaps the kama tanha, the sensual pleasures and sense pleasures craving, can point us toward what would it be like to live a life of simplicity? You know, perhaps I can use my investigations into where I get caught in that particular flavor of craving. Maybe I can look at that as a fulcrum to examine a different way of living, a simpler way of living. And bhava tanha, this place where we concretize and lock down our ideas about who we are and how the world is, this could be a place to investigate what would it be like to live in an open question, to just let this mind be free and fluid and flexible in each moment as it arises. I have no idea. I can't say that I successfully live that way very often, but those flickers come up when things feel wide open and I have a moment of knowing, I'm leaving space here instead of locking it down into my opinion and view. And just even in that little moment, it's a moment of awakening and freedom. So each of these categories of craving offers such rich arenas for some pretty cool investigation, you know, creative and awesome places to live our lives more fully. Thirst for justice, hunger to do something meaningful with life. I was kind of playing with those ideas. You know, we have this opportunity to use our wants to fuel, to feel positive actions for ourselves and for the world more broadly. I'll offer a few ending comments about how we can practice with that. I think number one is, for me, I would say that the primary stance to take toward craving is one of acceptance and compassion. Okay. I'm caught up in craving again. It's that same bone that the dog of my mind has been at for 3 days. Like, rather than craving to get rid of that then, what would it be like to just accept, okay, this is my path right now. I am caught in craving. It's got me by the throat right now. I can accept that. Can I be compassionate with myself about it? Can I be kind and gentle and know that I'm not the only one ever to have been caught in a cycle of craving and suffering? The Buddha described it 2,600 years ago. This is not just about me. It's not my fault. Bringing some compassion and tenderness. And this can feel so hard when we are in that place of brokenheartedness that we feel like we could die. It can be so hard when there's something we really want to succeed at. Like, I really want to quit smoking. Like, this is, you know, I want this so badly and I just can't do it. And the tendency is to just beat ourselves up again and again. So it's a real radical idea to imagine what would it be like to relate to those kinds of stuck places with acceptance and compassion. Really befriending and getting to know these experiences. This is part of what the Buddha taught in the very first turning of the wheel of Dhamma Sutta, when he first laid out these Four Noble Truths. He said, you know, get to know these Four Noble Truths like inside out. Don't just like think about them for a minute and tick them off the box. Like, learn how they feel, learn how they operate within ourselves. Really deeply befriend these experiences. So we can do that certainly in our meditation practice, as we did, some of us may have chosen to do a little bit this evening, just practicing with touching into that experience of craving. We can do it in daily life. We can actually time our cravings. I thought I might do that on this recent retreat I had. I was like, okay, I'm keen. When I have a craving come up, I'm going to time it and see how it goes. And honestly, the one time I thought of it, like, I lost interest in the timing so fast. So I'm guessing the craving didn't last that long anyway. It was probably for chocolate because I didn't have any. It was too hot. I was outside. And I thought, I'm going to be able to come back and report to the Sangha how long that craving for chocolate lasted. And like, goldfish brain just, like, I didn't even follow through. That shows you how long the craving lasted, though, right? The timing was quick, and it shifted. And I thought about chocolate again after that, but it was over the timing thing. Anyway, you can try it. If it seems useful to you, if it seems interesting, time it, come back, report in. Practicing with a little bit of renunciation is a nice way to just explore what this craving mind is about. And that was something like, you know, not bringing any chocolate with me. Just the little ones. You know, this is part of the beauty of our Dharma practice, is it sets us up, it gives us opportunities to have little experiments, little trial runs that maybe are going to prepare us in a profound way for when something really big goes down. We're going to already have some practice with renouncing. I went a week without chocolate. It seems little, but getting to know what that's like and bringing acceptance and compassion to it might just have eased the path for me a little bit for the next time I don't get something really big that I want. And we think about our meditation practice as letting go with each breath being a practice for death, right? It's not crazy to imagine that letting go of a chocolate bar in retreat could be practice for something that feels more significant to this mind at another time. So I think that's what I want to offer about craving tonight. Thank you for your attention. And I have a fun experiment.